Yeah, I published a paper a couple years ago of 102 people with autoimmune disease confirmed by biomarkers. 94% of them were biomarker free and off of all their immunosuppressants in 6 months' time by following my program. So autoimmune disease is not incurable. Autoimmune disease is not a lifelong sentence. We're beginning to realize more and more and more that most of the chronic diseases that we associate with aging are actually probably an autoimmune disease. I'm convinced and published that coronary artery disease is most likely an autoimmune disease. Parkinson's disease is most likely an autoimmune disease. And I think as we go along, we're going to find that most of these underlying problems are at their base an autoimmune disease. And quite frankly, autoimmune diseases are caused by a leaky gut. And seal your leaky gut and your autoimmune disease goes away.
That was Dr. Stephen Gundry, cardiac surgeon, podcast host, and four-time New York Times bestselling author. And this is his story on the Pacing Racing Podcast. All right, what's happening, everyone? Welcome back and welcome to the first-time listeners. My name is Stephen Langenhausen. I am the host of Pacing Racing, the podcast helping you reach optimal health and endurance through learning from the world's brightest health experts and the world's most talented endurance athletes. Now, today joining us is Dr. Stephen Gundry. Now, Dr. Gundry is a renowned heart surgeon, medical researcher, four-time New York Times best-selling author, and a podcast host of the Dr. Gundry podcast, and he's changed his focus from medicine to reversing disease with dietary changes. Dr. Gundry has spent two decades of research on reversing disease and improving longevity, and he is here today to chat with us about some of his findings. Dr. Gundry is one of the few nutritionists who lived and practiced in the blue zones and studied and worked with many high-functioning elderly patients. He's helped many patients reverse symptoms of autoimmune conditions and live high-functioning and healthy lives through dietary changes. Now, I wouldn't be doing due diligence without saying, as you begin to realize the guests that come on this show may begin to have opposing opinions and studies on foods that may help us. And this could be overwhelming to some, like it has been to me, but I wouldn't feel like I'd be doing listeners justice if I only interviewed with a biased approach on only picking what I felt was right for me. Now, we want to therefore be mindful that what might be applicable to some may not be important for others. And like all diet books, Dr. Gundry's findings on food have been met with praise and criticism. So I'll leave it up to you to decide where you fall on this. And ultimately, I want to make sure I do my best to ask the right questions to help decide if this diet is right for you. Now, Dr. Gundry recommends the lectin avoidance diet, which means avoid grains, nightshades, unless you peel the skins and deseed them, beans, unless you pressure cook them, seeds, American dairy, and non-pasteurized meats. Now, that's a lot of healthy food, right? But if you find these foods never cause you any problems and are too challenging to remove, then I encourage you to just keep doing what you're doing now. But if you're struggling with symptoms of some sort and after hearing this, you think it could be a possibility, then maybe it's worth trying out and seeing if you notice any relief of any symptoms you may feel. Of course, I have to note that I'm of course not a doctor and I don't give medical advice. I'm just simply out there asking these questions in hope to find the answers for optimal, healthy living and reversing autoimmune conditions. Anyway, guys, listen into this episode as we talk about the Blue Zone diets, why lectins can potentially be a culprit if you suffer digestive issues or from autoimmune conditions, and how you can tell through blood tests or a lectin food elimination diet. We'll also chat about what we can do to some of our lectin favorite foods to detoxify them before we consume them. And we also talk about being gluten-free and what that means to your microbiome and why glyphosate may be another culprit that causes so much gluten sensitivity. Now, there's so much to talk about here in such a short period of time, so let's make the most of it and let me know what you think about this after listening to the show. Anyway, guys, let's get into it. All right, so Dr. Gundry, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for taking the time to come on and chat with us here today.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And first off, before we dive in here, can you give us a quick little synopsis of your background? You were a cardiac surgeon, a podcast host, and a four-time New York Times bestselling author. So your list of accolades is endless, right? So can you just give us a little bit of a rundown?
Yeah, I did my undergraduate work at Yale, and I actually had a special major in human evolutionary biology. And then I trained as a cardiothoracic surgeon and was chairman and professor of cardiothoracic surgery at Loma Linda University for many years. Pioneered with my partner, Leonard Bailey, infant and pediatric heart transplant. Did a lot of work on robotic surgery, invented a way to protect the heart that's still used in most heart surgeries. And then about 20 years ago, I found a guy who reversed inoperable coronary artery disease with diet and supplements over 6 months' time, and it blew me away because it was supposed to be impossible. So I actually started working on that, resigned my position, and started a couple clinics where I teach people how to get rid of whatever they got with food and supplements. And the rest is history.
No, that's incredible. It's an incredible history too, from what you've done over the years since then. It's remarkable in some of the stories. And you know, one of the things I wanted to touch base on were the Blue Zones, because you spent some time working and practicing out in the Blue Zone areas. And I kind of want to touch base on that. And I guess for those who don't know, I guess what Blue Zones are, can you kind of explain a little bit about them? And what is it about those areas that they're eating or doing differently that help them live longer and healthier lives?
Yeah, the Blue Zone was described, coined by journalist Dan Buchner. Initially he looked at a few areas of the world which had not only extended longevity compared to other places, but actually healthy longevity. And one of those happens to be Loma Linda, California, where I practiced most of my career, and we're the only Blue Zone in North America. Other Blue Zones, for instance, are Okinawa, Japan, where I've had the pleasure of visiting. Crete is another one. Sardinia is another one. The Nicoyan Peninsula in Mexico is another one. There's been others added since that time, partially by me. One is the island, the Catavans in Papua New Guinea. There's another fascinating Blue Zone south of Naples, a city called Acciaroli. So these people have a remarkable lifespan. They do extremely well in their mid to late 90s, early 100s. For instance, in Acciaroli, about 30% of the population is over 100 years of age. And so what intrigues everyone about these Blue Zones is everybody has a different theory on why Blue Zones exist. And you'll hear that, well, they all eat beans and whole grains. Well, in fact, they don't all eat beans and whole grains. What I proposed in my book, The Longevity Paradox, is that the common factor of all these Blue Zones is they don't eat much animal protein. And even fish is an animal, even egg is an animal, even cheese is an animal. And that I argue that that's actually the unifying factor of all these Blue Zones. For instance, Okinawans, 85% of the ancient Okinawan diet was a purple sweet potato. And only about 5% of their diet was rice, and it happened to be white rice. And about 5% of their diet was soy, but it happened to be miso. It wasn't soybeans. So that's just an example of a diet that isn't based on whole grains and beans.
Right. And that's fascinating to hear, right? Because, yeah, that's originally what I thought, too, was Blue Zones. They ate a lot of beans and legumes. But definitely after reading what you had to say, you definitely clarified a lot of that. And let's sort of touch on lectins, because your book highlights and is narrated around removing lectins from a diet. And I guess just to, again, catch listeners up here, to get everyone on the same page, what are lectins and why are they to be avoided?
So lectins are a class of proteins that are called sticky proteins that are used by plants as one of their defense mechanisms against being eaten, either themselves or more particularly their seeds, which are their babies. And lectins are present in almost all grains, particularly in the hull of grain. Your listeners might want to know that gluten happens to be a lectin, and that's actually why it's mischievous. But there are plenty of other mischievous lectins, and most gluten-free foods actually are loaded with other lectins. And I've written several papers that show that people on a gluten-free diet who still have leaky gut and or autoimmune diseases, it's the removal of other lectins from their diet that eventually reverses their autoimmune disease and seals their leaky gut. The other particular sources of lectins are beans, any of the legumes, peanuts, and cashews are beans. They're not nuts at all. And seeds like chia seeds actually are, and quinoa are loaded with lectins. And the nightshade family, potatoes, eggplant, peppers, and tomatoes. And oh, by the way, goji berries are nightshades. Darn it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a ton of them out there, and that's super fascinating. And I guess before we get into the food specifics there, for starters, like, should everyone be avoiding lectins? I mean, like, for example, if we have listeners who don't have any specific symptoms or conditions and they feel okay after consuming those foods, would that imply that they don't need to be avoiding lectins, or is it people primarily just suffering from certain symptoms or conditions?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And my critics raise that all the time, that obviously our ancestors ate and consumed lectins quite easily. And my argument is, if they bother to read my book, they know that unfortunately in the West, we have a lot of deadly disruptors that have made us susceptible to lectins. For instance, we have multiple defense systems against lectins. We have acid in our stomach that is quite good at dissolving proteins, and lectins are proteins. A ton of us are on acid-reducing drugs, many for heartburn, which, believe it or not, are caused by lectins. And so we don't have an acid barrier. Most of the time, we have a great microbiome, all those bacteria that live in us, that are actually capable of breaking down lectins. In fact, there is a lovely bacteria that enjoys eating gluten, of all things. But our antibiotics that we take and the antibiotics that are fed to our animals have pretty much decimated our microbiome. So there's a lot of factors. What I can say is that when I've studied traditional cultures that do eat things like cereals, beans, grains, even tomatoes, they have developed ways of detoxifying the lectins. For instance, in Italy, beans are soaked for 48 hours and the water is changed every 6 hours, and then they're cooked for a prolonged period of time, and it's actually pretty effective against lectins. In Italy, tomatoes are peeled and de-seeded before they make sauce because the peels and the seeds have the lectins. Cucumbers in France are peeled and de-seeded before they're eaten. And in America, the Southwest American Indians, where chili peppers came from, always peel and de-seed their chilies before they eat them or grind them into chili powder because the peels and seeds have the lectins. Just as a fun fact, believe it or not, chili pepper flakes, you know, those flakes and seeds that we put on our pizza, that was actually thrown away. That was discarded because they were taking those off of peppers. And somebody got the smart idea, hey, these are nice and hot, and the rest is history.
You know, one of the things too, upon your research there and discovering that the effects of lectins that people wouldn't realize because there's not much discussion around it, and people just think because they're healthy foods that we should be eating them, right? But one of the things you highlighted in a previous discussion you had was that genetically engineering crops, what they'll do now is inject more lectin to protect some of these crops they're growing from insects as a defense system. So we obviously know it's damaging insects, right? And so that just goes to prove that your statement on how it's their defense mechanism using a lectin to cause us, you know, disruptions affects insects, and it could obviously do the same with us too, right?
Yeah, correct. For instance, most tomatoes, commercial tomatoes, have been genetically engineered with a snowdrop lectin to protect them against insects. And unbeknownst to you, they may not be sprayed with Roundup, but they're still genetically engineered, and you're eating increased lectins. Corn has a almost all corn in the United States and Canada is genetically engineered, and it's called BT corn, and a lectin is inserted into corn so that the corn is resistant to insects. And we can now test humans for whether they react to this BT corn lectin. And I can assure you that every human being that I have tested has a reaction to BT corn. And since most of the corn in North America is BT corn, we react to that lectin, whether you know it or not.
Wow. It's incredible to hear. So, you know, I guess when we talk about nightshades, you've spoken a lot of them here already, but when we look at patients who get diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, right away, I think a lot of naturopaths or nutritionists will suggest they undergo a autoimmune paleo diet. And, you know, one of the things in there, they want to cut out nightshades and grains and things like that. And so a lot of people were probably really confused on why nightshades, but I mean, you explained that just there correctly. And I mean, I guess a lot of them are fine to eat if you peel the skin and deseed them. Is that correct?
Yeah, most people can tolerate them just fine. One of the things, the other nice thing that I talk about in my most recent book, the Plant Paradox Family Cookbook, is that pressure cooking in general destroys lectins. The only lectin that pressure cooking won't destroy is gluten, unfortunately. But you can throw your tomatoes in an Instant Pot. You can throw your peppers in an Instant Pot. You can throw your potatoes in an Instant Pot, and it'll pretty much take care of the lectins, which is great news.
Yeah, that's it, right? And that's the main thing too, is this might be a lot of bad news to a lot of people who are thinking this is a big game changer for my diet, because they can imagine they're probably eating most of this daily, right? So I'll definitely get into asking some of the questions here in a minute about, you know, things we can do to remove some of these or detoxify some of the lectin-based foods. But one of the other things which is important to note is grains. And of course, we have wheat and quinoa, rice and oats. And traditionally, I guess we never ate whole grain or brown rice. And can you sort of explain why these are difficult to digest, whereas foods like teff or sorghum or millet can be great alternatives to that?
Well, one great thing is that millet and sorghum don't have any lectins. One of the reasons they don't is they don't have a hull. And hulls in general are where the lectins are placed by the plant. So one of the most mischievous of the lectins is called wheat germ agglutinin. And it's in the germ of the wheat. And in milling, usually the germ is thrown away. And traditional cultures, it's interesting, for 10,000 years, we've been trying to get the hull off of wheat. It was successfully done in the late 1800s with the Swiss roller mill. Traditional Asian cultures have always eaten white rice. 4 billion people use rice as their staple. And yet the rice that 4 billion people choose to eat is white rice. The hull is removed because, in general, the hull is has the lectin. So brown rice is actually pretty bad for you. That goes against most of our training. The other thing I might add is there actually has never been a controlled study of the Mediterranean diet, which does have cereal grains and beans, against a Mediterranean diet that doesn't have cereal grains and beans. And so when people say, well, grains and beans are healthy, look at the Mediterranean diet, there actually are several studies of the Mediterranean diet that shows that the grains and beans are a bad part of that diet that are kept under control by the other good parts of that diet, which include a lot of olive oil, red wine, a lot of fruits and vegetables. So we have to be careful when we say, well, the Mediterranean diet is good for you because it has grains and beans.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really eye-opening. So I guess, like, what's going on? Like, what can you tell us about our gut microbiome through all of this? I know it already takes a beating as from things like the environment, like glyphosate or antibiotic use and things like that, right? Now, just eating these lectin foods or at least avoiding them, can we see improvement in our gut microbiome? Or I know you've talked about removing gluten from a diet, and how does our microbiome sort of react to that?
Well, interestingly, if you stop eating gluten and you did have gluten-eating bugs, they leave because they got nothing to eat. And a number of my gluten-free patients who do reintroduce gluten to their diet get very symptomatic very quickly because they don't have those bugs anymore. My whole practice now is trying to get people's microbiome back into order and to heal their leaky gut. I mean, if you had asked me even 15 years ago what I thought about leaky gut, I would have laughed you out of the room as pseudoscience. But we can now absolutely measure leaky gut and do it accurately. And the vast majority of people who have an autoimmune disease have a leaky gut. And Hippocrates, 2,500 years ago, said that all disease begins in the gut. And he was right. And he didn't have the Human Microbiome Project to back him up.
It's amazing to me. Like, some of these foods are bad for you, but at the same time, cutting something out like gluten and then having ingest gluten somewhere down the road, and then they react worse to it. Is there, ways that they can work around that? Like, a healthy alternative, like a sourdough bread, would that sort of help the gut microbiome? Or what are your thoughts on that?
So, the problem with sourdough bread, sourdough obviously involves fermentation. And fermentation is a method of decreasing lectin content. That's what, for instance, the Incas fermented quinoa, they let it rot, and then they cooked it. And it's not on the package directions. So I unfortunately have a large number of patients who present with autoimmune diseases. And sourdough bread is one of the mischief makers that I have to take out of their diet before we can finally get rid of their autoimmune disease. In fact, just actually yesterday, I have a woman with Hashimoto's thyroiditis that we were making great progress on. Her markers of anti-thyroid antibodies were going down and down and down. And I saw her yesterday, and one of them had jumped up. And I said, what's going on? And she says, well, I've all this COVID, I got a sourdough starter, and I've been baking my own sourdough bread. And lo and behold, her markers jumped right up from her sourdough bread. So wow. I don't think sourdough is safe if you have an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm. No, good to clarify that. That's amazing to hear. I mean, when we specifically look at foods with lectin, I think it's safe to say some of these foods you'll have to outright avoid, especially if you have an autoimmune disease. But what tools are out there that, as we mentioned earlier, that we can use to incorporate some of those lectin-containing foods back into our diet safely through detoxification, like methods, as you mentioned, like pressure cooking or soaking, de-seeding, and so forth?
Yeah, I think all of those are great places to start. I'm very hopeful, and I presented a paper at the American Heart Association Lifestyle and Epidemiology meeting in March of this year that we can follow people's leaky gut status. We can follow their reaction to gluten and other lectin-containing foods. And in a way, it's premature to get everybody excited, but in 9 out of 10 people that we followed all the way through over about a 9-month period and confirmed sealing of leaky gut, that 9 out of 10 of the people subsequently no longer had antibodies to gluten or wheat or other lectins. And again, it's too early to say that maybe we can re-educate our immune system to not react to these substances, and it may be safe to reintroduce these things in limited amounts. That's what I hope. And like I say, we have some evidence of it happening in humans, but I don't want to make a blanket statement that, okay, you know, sky's the limit once you heal your leaky gut.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. No, it's hopeful, though promising to hear that kind of research is in the works. So I think a lot of people will be happy to hear that. And, you know, I guess one thing people are probably wondering is, how can you most accurately test if you have a lectin intolerance? Like, one of the things I was thinking of, would this show up in an IgD sensitivity blood test for each food? Because I'm just thinking back, I know with myself, I had inflammatory markers for actually most beans, cashews, peanuts, and gluten. But then there are some things that there's no reactivity to, like potatoes or rice or nightshades. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people might be asking the same thing. Like, is this testing accurate towards what you're saying? Or is it just there's different lectins for each of these different types of foods? Or what's your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So many food sensitivity tests are actually based on IgG and allergy. And I think they're, quite frankly, not worth the money you pay for them. I use IgG and IgM reaction tests, and I think they're more accurate. I think the other thing that people should realize, in the good old days, we looked for leaky gut by measuring zonulin levels. Zonulin was discovered by Dr. Fasano from Johns Hopkins as the culprit in gluten that caused leaky gut, and amazing research. But what we subsequently determined is that measuring zonulin isn't very accurate, because zonulin is captured by another receptor on enterocytes, the lining of our gut, so that you may not actually measure zonulin in the bloodstream. So what we measure is anti-zonulin, because, believe it or not, zonulin is a foreign protein, and we measure anti-actin. Actin is one of the components of tight junctions. And so when we see anti-zonulin and anti-actin, it's a far more accurate way of, in my opinion and others, looking for leaky gut. Also, we see a number of people who may not have markers of leaky gut per se, but they have high markers of anti-LPSs. LPSs are lipopolysaccharides. In my book, I don't swear, but I call them little pieces of shit. they actually are pieces of bacteria. And the interesting thing about these guys is that they can hop on to the fat-carrying molecules called chylomicrons and actually walk through the wall of our gut unimpeded. And our immune system cannot tell the difference between a piece of bacterial cell wall and a living bacteria. And so our immune system becomes activated. And we can take, believe it or not, a healthy volunteer and inject LPSs in them. They are not living bacteria, and they will go into septic shock. They will become profoundly ill, hypotensive, as if we had put living bacteria in them.
Right. It's so true. Yeah, no, that's incredible to hear. It's so fascinating, right? So that's good to know then, rather than going for that type of testing. If you want to put the money out and get the actual blood test, then just something like the IgG, IgM, and the testing levels of anti-zonulin and anti-actin levels and things like that. So that clarifies that up a lot. And I guess for the listeners who are looking for more other alternative methods, so that maybe that aren't so expensive, if they're in a pinch for money, there is the old classic method of simply removing lectins from the diet, right? And then just to see if the symptoms diminish. So, I mean, I guess that's
one of my books. Look, you know, just do an elimination diet, get rid of the most common lectins in the diet and see what happens. One of the things that I enjoy talking about is that we think about it. We are the only animal that needs toilet paper. And just think about that for a minute. And it turns out that whether or not there's anything to wipe when you're done is a pretty good indication whether or not you have a reactive sensitivity to something that you're eating. And a lot of my patients are shocked when they come in and say, this is the weirdest thing. I really don't need toilet paper anymore. I said, yeah, isn't that weird? And they said, I never even thought about that.
That's unbelievable. No, that's really cool. I appreciate taking the time to discuss all this information. I think this is a lot for people. And, I guess one of the things people would love to get a little more in depth on, of course, if we have more time, was, list of foods to avoid and subsequently list of foods that they should put in place of some of these lectin-based foods. But, let's, I guess, rather redirect them to the book and sort of explain what can they find in the books that you've written around lectin diets and where they can go to find out about them.
Yeah, so you can find these books anywhere. The Plant Paradox, the original book, has been translated into 36 foreign languages. We've got communities all over the world. It's even in Lithuanian. I didn't realize. You can go to drgundry.com. You can go to my supplement company, gundrymd.com. I do a podcast every week, the Dr. Gundry podcast. I've got two YouTube channels. I'm on Instagram. And there's a lot of free content on YouTube that I do every week, recipes. It's actually easy to find how to do this at drgundry.com. You can find the good food list and the bad food list. In general, I laughingly say we really ought to be gorillas that live in Italy. And by that, I mean we ought to be eating a lot of leaves, and we ought to be pouring olive oil over all those leaves. And just remember, a gorilla has more muscle than we could possibly ever imagine, and all they eat is leaves. Same with a horse. They got more muscle than we'll ever have, and all they eat is leaves, grass.
No, so true. It's very well said. And, I appreciate that, because I think a lot of people listening here, this could be a big eye opener, and they might be really looking forward to finding out this new information, but also hesitant because it's a lot of foods they might have eaten every day. But I think you clarified up this really well. And of course, as you just mentioned there, your podcasts, your YouTube channels, and the books themselves are absolutely incredible, and they'll guide you through step by step. And any questions you still have after this podcast, there's definitely loads of information out there, free information, as you mentioned, that can help you get through this journey, and definitely give it a try, because I think it's very fascinating to hear that. And one of the last things I just want to ask before we wrap this up is I just want to get your quick input on the umbrella term of autoimmune disease. And I know typically it's just mentioned as it's diseases that are incurable. They don't know why it's come about. And we're told by many health experts that food doesn't play a role in these diseases. But I mean, I feel you seem to think otherwise in all that, right?
Yeah, I published a paper a couple of years ago of 102 people with autoimmune disease confirmed by biomarkers. 94% of them were biomarker free and off of all their immunosuppressants in 6 months' time by following my program. So autoimmune disease is not incurable. Autoimmune disease is not a lifelong sentence. Kelly Clarkson, who had Hashimoto's thyroiditis and was on thyroid medication, and she followed my program, just found the book, read the book, and she no longer has Hashimoto's thyroiditis. She's no longer on medication. She lost 30 pounds, which she thought was fun. This is not a lifelong commitment. We're beginning to realize more and more and more that most of the chronic diseases that we associate with aging are actually probably an autoimmune disease. I'm convinced and published that coronary artery disease is most likely an autoimmune disease. There's new data coming out that Parkinson's disease is most likely an autoimmune disease. And I think as we go along, we're going to find that most of these underlying problems are at their base an autoimmune disease. And quite frankly, autoimmune diseases are caused by a leaky gut. And seal your leaky gut and your autoimmune disease goes away.
Awesome. No, I love to hear that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think any listeners, whether they have an autoimmune disease, or I'm sure if not, they might have a loved one or a friend that they know has an autoimmune disease. I think this is invaluable information to share with them. So I really appreciate that. And thanks so much for coming on, Dr. Gundry. I know we've only scratched the surface on this. And again, you've let people know where to go. Check out your books, check out the podcast, and of course on YouTube. So, you know, it's been super inspiring and informative to chat with you today. And, you know, all the best. Stay safe and take care.
Well, thanks a lot. And just keep everybody reminded that you absolutely can take control of your health. And that's the exciting thing.
Beautiful. Awesome. Great way to end that off. Appreciate that. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Awesome. Well, that's a wrap with Dr. Stephen Gundry. Thanks so much for listening in. And if you enjoyed this episode, among others, then please just take a minute to open up the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone, search Pacing Racing, and click subscribe, and then scroll down to the bottom and just leave us a quick written review. It takes less than a minute to do, but it goes a long way in helping me out. So to all who do that, thanks so much. That's highly appreciated. And other than that, happy training. And if you want to train with me on Zwift, then drop me a follow by searching Stephen Langenhausen. Anyway, guys, that's it for now. Take care. Chat soon. Cheers.